Hello, this is Kendra Brodine, founder and CEO of Women Lawyers Online. And today I am so pleased to introduce you to Lynn Robertson. Lynn has been practicing litigation for over 30 years, particularly in the areas of premises liability for violent crime, other premises liability, pharmacy liability, automobile truck accident cases, products liability, malicious prosecution, and other personal injury law, as well as insurance coverage matters. Ms. Robertson has completed over 75 jury trials in these areas. Her practice in the area of premises liability actions is broad and varied. It includes slip, trip, and fall, negligent security, wrongful serving of alcohol, wrongful detention or prosecution by store security, assault and battery, and dangerous conditions on property. Ms. Robertson's representation of clients involved in these areas of litigation ranges from hotels and motels, apartment complexes, retail stores and malls, restaurants, and bars and nightclubs. Ms. Robertson is a member of the State Bar of Georgia and the Georgia Defense Lawyers Association, and she's chair of the Premises Liability Committee, or served in that capacity from 2002 to 2005, and she has been a member of the Board of Directors since 2003, currently serving as Vice President. She also served as chair of the Trial Academy since 2008. She has served in that way. Lynn served as an elected member of the Board of Directors for the Litigation Section of the Atlanta Bar Association from 1999 until 2006, serving as its chair in 2004 and 2005. Ms. Robertson served as chair for the Atlanta Bar CLE Board of Trustees in 2005 and 2006. Lynn served as a member at large of the Atlanta Bar Board from 2005 to 2009, and she's currently serving as secretary this year and next year. She's an active member of the Defense Research Institute, otherwise known as DRI, and is past chair of DRI's section on trial tactics. She served in that capacity from 2004 to 2006. She's a member of DRI's Insurance Law Committee. Ms. Robertson has been a contributing regional editor and author for the Covered Events DRI newsletter relating to insurance coverage matters in the past, and she is rated AV by Martindale Hubbell. Ms. Robertson has been an invited teacher on trial advocacy for the National Institute of Trial Advocacy, the Atlanta Bar Association, the Georgia Defense Lawyers Association Trial Academy, and the Emory University School of Law. Lynn has been a frequent speaker on premises liability, trial tactics, and insurance law seminars for DRI, the State Bar of Georgia, the Atlanta Bar, the South Dakota Defense Lawyers Association, Kansas Association of Defense Counsel, North Carolina Association of Defense Attorneys, and other groups. And she has appeared in Who's Who in America, Who's Who of American Women, and Who's Who in American Law. Ms. Robertson has also been an invited guest speaker on premises liability on The Layman's Lawyer, a television program on the public broadcast system in Georgia. Ms. Robertson was named as a Georgia Super Lawyer from 2004 until 2010, and only 5% of Georgia lawyers received this distinction. These lawyers were elected by their peers, and she's also named as one of the top 50 women lawyers in Georgia in 2007 and 2009. So with that, thank you so much, Lynn, for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. Very welcome. I was just thinking between your Southern accent and my Minnesota accent, we're just going to get some geographical diversity.
Well, you know, I did a few years up in Minnesota, but
I
had enough snow and moved to the South. So.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you, we always say it's character building, the snow we have.
Yes.
Our winters build character, but at least that's our excuse for why we tolerate them. But, well, this is great to have you here today, and if it's all right, I'd just like to move right into some of the questions and then we can start
okay.
a conversation.
That'll
all right.
be fine.
Great. Well, Lynn, would you say that in looking back at your life and your career, is juggling the competing demands of work and your legal practice and the rest of your life, is that something that's always come naturally to you, or do you feel like there was a pivotal point somewhere along the line or maybe a variety of points that led you to be a little more adept, a little more strategic or intentional toward creating that kind of work-life integration?
Well, I think it came pretty naturally until I had a child. And I think most women will find that to be the case, that even after you marry, you know, your husband generally has a full-time job and you've got a full-time job and the two of you can take care of each other and yourselves without a problem. It's when you throw a child into the mix that it can get more complicated. So I think that was the pivotal time where you start making a conscious decision about how you're going to spend your time and where you want to spend your time.
I agree. I think when you have those little ones relying on you, it makes everything so much different. When, like you said, when it's just you or you and your husband, you can get away with a lot more and probably greater imbalance until those children come along.
Well, and so if I would travel out of town for depositions or a trial or a conference of some sort, it didn't increase any workload on my husband until we had a child. And then you have to consider both of your schedules, because if he's going to be out of town at the same time, it's not going to work. So it was helpful to me that, number one, I married well, and number two, he was in public service. He's also a lawyer and now a judge, but he was in public service, so his hours were relatively regular and involved very little travel. So he was usually able to be there to take her to the daycare center or pick her up from the daycare center at a decent hour.
Mm-hmm. That makes a difference, being able to be sort of strategic as to how we pull it all together. And like you said, having another person around to help with those things, especially someone with regular, predictable hours, can be a saving grace when trying to do all of that.
That's for sure.
So, Lynn, would you say then, considering, you know, that, and especially that pivotal time of having a child and being a mother and raising your child, along that way, what would you consider, and maybe completely apart from that, but in your journey, what would you consider your biggest challenge or struggle to be as you looked at trying to create that ideal life and legal career integration for you and what that looked like for you? What was your greatest challenge?
Well, in terms of balancing family life and the challenges of a private practice, I think it was time. It's always been time, because I'm a person who actually needs to sleep at night. And so I couldn't keep working all night while the baby was sleeping. Probably that, and then just the typical pressures that one deals with private practice in law. You know, challenges from clients, from courts, scheduling, trying to make it a profitable enterprise, trying to collect on your bills, all those sorts of things, and then building a practice so that, you know, you ultimately get your own clients and have people trusting you to handle their legal matters. So all of that is just stuff that you have to slog away at as you're developing during your career.
Mm-hmm. So the time, just creating that time, or not even creating time, because like we said, and I'm the same way, when people are, oh, just stay up later or get up earlier, and my brain doesn't work. It just sort of shuts off at night, and it doesn't start up again in the morning until I'm well rested. So
yeah, I always tell people I've never been a morning person, but I've also never been a night person, so I'm kind of a noon person.
Yeah, exactly. The morning,
so I can't
and night
burn my candle at both ends and still function very well.
That's right. I think, and in terms of both being a spouse, being a mother, and also really being fully present and sharp for your clients, when you're lacking that sleep, you're not able to do those things. And so it's kind of a bounded amount of time that you have in the day, so making the very best possible use of that. And then, like you said, there's those typical pressures of just building a practice and dealing with all the demands, the logistics, the things coming at you unexpectedly from the courts, from clients, and making it profitable, finding those challenges as well. And trying, I'm sure, trying not to let too much of the pressures from the practice affect the personal parts, you know, and not spill over too much into your relationships with family and friends.
And as you know, that's always a struggle, because you know, if you have a rough day at the office, you always want to kick the dog and fuss at your spouse and beat the kids when you get home, and it's hard to, because there's really nowhere else you can let it out, I guess, unless you're a boxer and go home and hit the walls or something. So,
that's right.
You know, your family is the one that bears the brunt of the stress in your life, and they're the ones that get all the good stuff, too. So
That's true. We should remind them of that.
I know.
they put up with the junk so that they can get the treasures. But I do, like you said, I find myself apologizing to my husband sometimes, just saying, I just need to vent because you're the only one I can vent to. And it's a safe place, which is a gift. And yet remembering that sometimes they don't understand. That's our motivation. So.
Right.
Oh, my. Well, along that same journey, I would just ask your biggest lesson or something important that you feel that you've learned that you'd like to share. What would you say your biggest lesson has been?
I would say, is it going to matter in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the things we feel are extraordinarily stressful on our day-to-day lives, such as, have I billed 8 or 10 hours today? Have I met my billable hour goal? You know, did I go to that bar association meeting? Those kinds of things. You have to ask yourself, is this part of my grand plan? Is this really going to matter in 5 years? For example, do I make partner after 8 years instead or 9 years? Does it really matter 5 or 10 years down the road whether you did it in 8 years or 9 years? And I think people who are earlier in their career position than I am now might find a little of their stress eased if they would look at life that way. For example, do I need to take off early today to go to my daughter's recital or her soccer game and not make my billable hours, but what's going to matter in 5 years? You know, that I was there for her or that I, you know, wasn't quite totally up to the billable hours for a few days during the year. And I think because you're getting pressured from all sides, your partners, you know, coworkers, your clients, the courts, your own inner, you know, type A saying, go, 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 and the demands of raising a family and keeping your personal life sane, you have to recognize that you may not want to be 110% in all things. And I just decided along the way what I felt was important to developing my career and my family life, and I did that. Whether my partners always appreciated it or not, I don't know. But I realized whether, you know, I made $50,000 a year or $60,000 a year might not matter in 10 years, and that I needed to build the practice the way I was satisfied with. And I think I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the end of the day, despite what those partners or colleagues thought, you were able to look yourself in the face and look your family in the face, too.
And that's real important, especially with the pressures of private practice, you know, to because everything is so squeezed, especially the kind of practice that I have, which is on the defense side of these cases where there's a lot of pressure to keep the bills as low as possible, and yet your partners are saying you have to bill as many hours as possible to make money so that you have enough money to keep the lights on and, you know, pay all the employees and everything, and they're competing interests. And then on top of that, you have all the ethics and integrity issues that you've got to stay on top of. And so I just decided I was just going to worry most about ethics and professionalism and developing my career, and if the hours fell into place, that was great. But if they didn't, I wasn't going to mess with any of the other part of it to get that part to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's worked out well for my overall career. I may not have made the most money I could make, but I certainly made good money. And like you said, you can look yourself in the mirror in the morning and be proud of what you've accomplished.
That's right. That you did the honorable thing, and maybe it wasn't the most profitable thing, but it was the honorable thing.
And right. And we have some banker friends that we can all look to for people who got those things confused.
That's right. That's right. And also, I think, as you mentioned, when you have a child, you're modeling for them too. And what are they seeing? And it sounds like they saw someone in you that decided what her priorities were and really lived them out with integrity. And so when we have that little person looking up to us, whether or not we know it, they're always looking, what do we want them to be seeing, I guess is the question.
And I know, as I was growing up as a small child, my father was rather unusual for his generation, and he grew up very poor in the South, and you know, dropped out of school during the Depression, and you know, had a very difficult life. And he realized early on that the way up was through education. And so he kind of drummed that into all the children, that it was most important to get your education, go to college, get a degree, you know, and he would always say, you can always get married, but always be able to support yourself,
wow,
take care of yourself, you know, that kind of thing. And so I felt that the best thing I could do for my, especially my daughter, would be to show how one does that,
mm-hmm,
and that that's a good thing to do. It's a thing you can do, and that she should model after that, to be able to support herself and not just count on getting married and having somebody else support her. And because, frankly, with this new generation, I don't think anybody can do that, because you know, nobody can live on one income unless you're just one person. So
yeah.
I felt the best thing I could do for her was, you know, to work hard and show that a woman could make it in a man's world.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I think I did do that, although when she's about 3 years old in the daycare center, they were asking each of the children, what do your mommy and daddy do? And at that time, her father was a prosecutor in the DA's office. And she says, well, my daddy puts people in jail, and mommy takes people to lunch.
Oh.
I never did figure out where she got the idea that
boy.
I spent all day going to lunch with people. But
that's right. Well, that's the thing. Sometimes you don't even know what they're seeing.
Yeah, so she apparently wasn't seeing Mama works hard
apparently
and struggles.
Not quite yet.
She just thought I went to restaurants all the time.
Not that it would be a bad thing, but in terms of teaching her self-sufficiency, probably.
Not a good thing, yeah.
Not what you wanted her to be learning.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's true what you said about your father teaching, really being ahead of his time in terms of what he taught you. And as you said, in this economic climate, in this day and age, you almost require those two incomes. So
you really do. I think any families, if you don't have a breadwinner who, you know, is extraordinary in terms mm-hmm. of their income producing ability, it's very difficult for middle class and lower middle class families to make it on just one income. I think you really have to scrimp and save to do that. And my concern, and probably as beaten into me by my father, was what if something happens to your husband?
Right.
You know, what if I've been out of work for 10 years and he gets hit by a truck?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to get back into the workplace and make a decent income if you've been out of it so long. So I just never wanted to be that dependent
mm-hmm.
on one income.
That's right, and that helpless if something, heaven forbid, did happen, especially when you have children, to be able to feel that if the worst should happen, that you could take care of yourself and your family
right.
and have that capability.
Right.
It takes some of the fear out of that unknown that we all live with all the time. Wow. But that's excellent advice. Excellent advice to your daughter in terms of what you are modeling to your children, and but also to other women, just to be thinking, you know, as they contemplate leaving the workforce for a while, or who knows, you know, but to be mindful of self-sufficiency and being able to take care of oneself no matter what, really, and especially
right.
when there's children relying on you, but even just for yourself, what would happen? What would you do if something did happen and you needed to be able to draw on your skills? And I think that's one of the concerns of women who are struggling with whether or not they should leave legal practice in order to start their families, realizing, especially in this climate, how hard it might be to get
right.
back in if they leave completely.
And I think that's why we see a lot of young women who are just starting families, who are in private practice, just cutting back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll cut back to 3 days a week, or they'll cut back to, you know, I leave at 4 or 5 every day, something like that, rather than step out of the practice altogether. They'll try to work around the family's time better. And I think because a lot more firms are realizing that if you don't want to lose all your good women,
right, right.
you're going to have to accommodate,
mm-hmm.
you know, those family issues. I mean, I know when I made partner with another woman, a lawyer in our firm, and we were the two first women partners in the firm. She never married, never had children. And I was the only mother partner for at least 10 years. Because a lot of the younger women, as they started families, they'd drop off the partnership track. And back in that day, you know, there weren't that many options. Now we have a lot more who are, you know, working what we call a partial schedule, which probably means 40 hours a week instead of 50 or 60,
exactly.
and are managing to raise children and still keep one foot in the day-to-day practice of law. So I think the world is slowly coming around to being a little bit more accommodating to women practitioners who want to have, you know, see their kids more than an hour before they go to bed every night.
Exactly. And like you said, firms don't want to necessarily lose that talent, recognizing that they have some very bright, very capable female attorneys who also want to have that family experience and that actually will most likely be better attorneys than if they were constantly stressed and struggling, being forced to work those hours that weren't compatible with what their
other priorities. Well, I think we've also, the men are figuring out that maybe that's not the way to live your life.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
And so the young men are putting the same pressure on firms to, look, I'm not going to work here till 8 o'clock every night. I'm not going to be here all day Saturday and a half a day Sunday. I'm just not going to do it. And it's very difficult anymore to find young people who are willing to work the kind of hours they expected of us 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing because I think it humanizes everybody. And the men want time with their families. They don't want to have kids and see them once an hour during the day. They want to spend time with them. They want to leave early to go to soccer matches. They want to coach Little League. And I think that has combined with the pressure from women to make it okay to accommodate those kinds of schedules.
As you said, it's a very welcome shift in what's been happening and what the legal practice looks like.
I think so. And I think, you know, women, because we've had to juggle so much, we're more efficient, and we just figured out how to do it better.
Exactly.
And they're all jumping on the bandwagon.
That's right. We can get more done in less time. And granted, I think our brains are a little more hardwired for that kind of multitasking, but I think we have some skills and some capabilities to share that allows us to get more done and then also to refuse to sacrifice those other priorities that we have in terms of our family, our relationships, our health, that we realize that those are things that are we refuse to let go of, but also we refuse to let go of our professional career, so finding ways to make them work and make them compatible.
Yeah.
It'll be a welcome thing as the generations of legal professionals change over to see folks who are graduating more recently or, you know, have been in practice 10 or 15 years, like you said, as opposed to folks who have been in there maybe 30 years at this point and had a different set of expectations. So,
right.
You know, wonder what it'll look like 15 years from now. Maybe it will be a much healthier kind of practice for everyone involved.
Yeah, I think it should. And I think it may be happening in careers like medicine, too, where it used to be, you know, that you work 5 days straight with no sleep except for what you can get curled up in a back room for an hour here and an hour there. I don't want that doctor working on me.
That's
I want
right.
the doctor who got 8 hours last night.
That's
you know?
Right.
And
well,
I think folks are starting to figure out this kind of macho approach to, you know, toughing it out may not always be the best way to practice your career.
No, exactly. It's so true, both in terms of our psychological health and our physical health. That like you said, is that the person, be it a doctor, is that the person you want operating on you? Or as an attorney, is that person really going to be the sharpest, best advocate for you when things get tough, if they haven't slept and they're burning the candle at both ends and their relationships are strained and those sorts of other repercussions that have come from practicing law 10, 12, 14 hours a day and letting the rest of their life suffer for it?
Right.
So, Lynn, what would you say then, given all of that, what would you share as your top two or three strategies or tips or just tools or even ways of thinking that you've utilized over the course of your life and career to help you find the best kind of balance or integration that you could possibly have?
Well, I don't know that I'm really the master of it or that I've accomplished a great deal in terms of balancing, but I think I have managed to position myself well in the legal marketplace because of my networking and my bar activities. And I'm always urging the young people to get involved early so that, you know, you you're going to be president of the Bar Association before you're 65. And you can use those opportunities, being involved with bar associations and whatnot, to develop leadership skills and positions and to network with other lawyers, either in your own community or, you know, across the country. And you can use that for developing business and also just developing your professional reputation in the legal community. So that's how you get opportunities to be published or to speak. And it's also a great way to meet good friends.
There's some great people out there that we wouldn't meet otherwise if we weren't at those networking events and getting to know people. That's a great piece of wisdom. Any other thoughts or tips or strategies that you'd like to share?
Well, early on I focused on the premises liability for violent crime area because, you know, rape victims were starting to sue property owners for damages. And most of the male attorneys were a little squeamish dealing with defending against, you know, a poor rape victim. And so they would get me involved, and I just found it to be a really interesting area. It was newly developing 25, 30 years ago, and it was an area that I could get out in front of. And so I published a lot in the area and got speaking engagements in the area and you know, developed a nationwide reputation as somebody who's a specialist in that area, which doesn't mean that's all I do. I do all these other areas as well, but that's something that I felt I could promote so that you have some tagline that goes with your name out in the legal marketplace.
Exactly. I think in terms of having something that you can either truly be a specialist in or hold yourself out in some way as having a competency in something unique, something that is niched and that you can say you're a leader in, it brings in a variety of opportunities, be they speaking or teaching or clients that are looking for someone with your particular expertise. So
it helps you stand out from the pack and like you say, develop a reputation so that you can get the clients and get the business in.
And exactly, when you can become that go-to person for something as unique and specific as, you know, for you, the area of practice that you are working in or something else, but that if all other lawyers were looking equal and you've been practicing in this area and are really one of the most qualified and most specialized, it becomes a no-brainer as to who someone would choose to work with because you become the obvious choice. And that's the power of picking and sticking with that kind of niche.
Mm-hmm.
That's great advice. All right. Well, before we wrap up, anything else that you'd like to share, any thoughts or words of wisdom from you?
I think I've given you about all the words of wisdom I've got.
It's a lot of them. You've given me a lot, and I appreciate it. And I just think there's both some philosophical large things just in terms of making choices and living out your priorities and living from that place of integrity and what really matters to very strategic things like networking and being involved in your local bar associations. That's great, great advice to people first coming out or really at any point in their legal career if they want to move it to a different level to become involved. Those are obvious things that sometimes we forget how easy it is just to sign up for a committee or volunteer on a board or something, but to both expand ourselves professionally and, as you mentioned, expand ourselves personally by meeting others who share the profession, share some interests, things like that. So I thank you for both.
I would also mention that in the various bar activities I've been involved in, they are all very well aware of the issue of diversity, and they are all striving to become more diverse, both in their membership and in their leadership. So to the extent that people of color or women may feel like they would be less than welcome at some old bar association meetings, they need to be disabused of that notion because we are all looking to attract, you know, the young people, the women, the people of color, so that we have a good, diverse, vibrant bar association. And so it's a real opportunity, I think, for younger people to get involved and develop their own leadership skills within the bar association and become known and stand out that way. So I always encourage them to do that because I think it helps you with your own skills dealing with clients and dealing with the courts.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And getting to know folks that you might otherwise not, I mean, who knows, for opposing counsel, things like that, once you've encountered them, it may not be instead of the courtroom being the first time that you encounter someone, maybe you've met them more socially or through a leadership position, and it just humanizes folks, too, to meet them outside of the more adversarial system that
we really work within. It really does. Mm-hmm. And you might have met the judge, too.
That's true.
And had a nice chat over cocktails, you know.
That's
and
right.
That never hurts.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't always help, but it never hurts.
Never hurts. That's right. Oh, Lynn, well, this has been terrific. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate the advice and the counsel that you've given, and I know that it will serve folks who are listening, women lawyers who are listening, and maybe facing some of these same struggles that you've faced, and you having moved through them and done some learning that you've been able to share. It's greatly appreciated. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I was happy to help.
Thank you. Lynn, as we close up, is there anything you'd like to share in terms of your own legal services, your websites, or ways that folks could connect with you if they felt so inclined?
Yeah, if they're interested, they can go to www.swiftcurry.com and look me up under the list of lawyers there or just see the various services that the firm offers beyond the litigation services I can provide.
Right. Great. Okay. So that's Swift Curry. It's SwiftCurrie.com.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's
all right.
Right.
So if you're looking for more information about Lynn or the firm that she works with, that is the web address for her. And her name again is Lynn Robertson. And so, Lynn, it's just been delightful to spend time with you this afternoon, to talk through some of these questions and to learn from you and your experience. I thank you so much.
Thank you, Kendra.
You're very welcome. So until next time, I appreciate everyone who's been here listening, reading, learning from the words of wisdom from women who have life and career experiences that we can learn from and that we can glean wisdom from. So thank you for being a part of this series. And until we meet again, this is Kendra Brodine of WomenLawyersOnline.com signing off and wishing you success always and in all ways. So thank you for being a part of this. Bye-bye.